Hi everyone. So I'm going to talk about, I'll try to apply it a little bit to Gil's talk, but I think I'm going to talk a bit more about indirect ways that the state and federal government can use to potentially make some sort of effort in controlling healthcare costs. So we're specifically going to talk about the use of rate review or rate regulation and a recent legislative endeavor that was taken on by folks in the state of California around passing actual rate regulation legislation. So this one thing to keep in mind, of course, is that states have the unique ability to regulate insurance in the U.S. So the federal government does not partake in rate regulation, rate review, and they don't really have control over how insurance companies actually operate. So each state has very different rules and regulations around how insurance companies operate. State insurance commissioners and other departments overseeing those insurance organizations decide who a licensed insurer is, how to regulate them, how to enforce any specific consumer protection laws, and also have individual benefit mandates. And so a lot of people talk about the fact that California has 54 plus benefit mandates and Utah has 15 or less benefit mandates. So because insurers are required to provide less care and less benefits in Utah, their premiums are lower. So that's one aspect where insurance commissioners and insurance departments often have quite a bit of say in terms of how plans actually operate in the state, but there's not a lot of federal oversight. Now, the Affordable Care Act in 2010 indirectly regulates insurance premiums at the federal level by establishing two major issues. So in addition to all of the bundling demonstrations, the Accountable Care Organization pilots, and all the things that are supposed to get at provider reimbursement and figuring out a better way to pay for healthcare than simply fee-for-service medicine, the Affordable Care Act also included some provisions that speak specifically to insurance rates and how insurance companies do business and how they set their rates and also how much they pay in out of their own premiums into medical care. So the two major aspects I'll talk about today are rate review and medical loss ratios. And so these are done at the federal level as part of the ACA, and they're currently being implemented. However, a lot of the burden falls on states to actually enact legislation that will enforce these laws because states still regulate insurance. So even though there's a federal requirement, states are still required to go through and figure out a way to legislate and comply with that federal requirement. And California has been moving forward pretty quickly on that. In some regard. And I have no relationships to disclose, so I'm not paid by Blue Cross at this time. They would probably be upset if I was. But so the average annual premiums for single and family coverage, you can see that the rate of increase has been going up at a pretty rapid clip over the last decade or two. I don't know if any of you have looked at a chart of this, but in 1996 was the last time we saw less than a 1 percentage point increase in insurance premiums on a year-to-year basis. So we've really never seen premiums go down. However, in the mid-90s, there was this sense that managed care had controlled costs to an extent where premiums weren't going up at such a drastic pace. And then as managed care kind of developed a bad reputation to a certain extent, as provider groups had a harder time taking on the risk that's inherent in taking capitated rate per member per month rate, we saw that go away. In California, we saw many IPAs and medical groups back out of managed care or go out of business, and so we ended up back in kind of a hybrid managed care fee-for-service world where even on the fee-for-service side, there was contracting in the form of preferred provider organizations, but there was really no constraint on use of services beyond what a patient wanted to get and what their insurance covered. But you can see here that we've been running about a 12 to 13% increase in premiums over the past 10 years or so. And last year we had about a 9.4% increase in both the single and family market. So it's gotten progressively more expensive. Now, that last slide was the employer market. So you have to think those are small group and large group plans, not the individual market. There's no good source of data for individual market premiums, and the federal government's trying to develop that capacity, in essence, by creating this rate review guidance and allowing states and kind of asking states to provide information on individual premium rate increases as part of the ACA. So in California, we had two pretty publicly derided rate review or rate increase requests. So in 2010, just before healthcare reform was actually voted on and passed, and a lot of people chalk up the success of President Obama and the Democratic legislators' ability to keep health reform on the political map to this rate increase request. But Anthem Blue Cross came through with a maximum 39% individual rate increase for a group of people in California that was in the individual market. So the individual market in California represents only about 5%, 6% of the population, but their premiums tend to go up at a really high clip each year. And so you often see efforts by insurers, whether they're for-profit or profit, to increase premiums at a pretty high rate each year. And one of the complaints about this, and one of the reasons that the insurance companies suggest, is that in bad economic times, the people who can't afford insurance but are fairly healthy will readily drop that insurance coverage. It's not through their employer. They're paying the full cost of the premium, and rather than pay, you know, an extra $300 every month because the rate went up, they'd rather drop it and take their chances. Whereas the sickest people stay in that individual insurance plan, so we end up with adverse selection where sicker people who use lots of services are staying in the policy. And because California is a rate, it's a guaranteed renewal state, which basically means once you have an insurance plan, as long as you renew on time, they have to keep giving it to you. They try to kind of move this population ends up kind of concentrating in specific plans, and so their increases are substantially more than if it was subsidized by other people who are a bit healthier. So this rate increase was withdrawn due to errors in filing and public pressure, but it took a few months for the dust to settle. And then in 2011, Blue Shield, which is a nonprofit plan in California, requested a phased-in quarterly increase, averaging about 30% over the year, but there were specific people within the insurance pool who were going to be charged over 86% more than they had in the previous year for the same coverage. And they withdrew that in the PPO market after public outcry and the insurance commissioner requesting a filing delay, but it actually went through with a 16% increase in Department of Managed Healthcare HMO-regulated plans. So some of the market ended up with an increase, some it was withdrawn. And this underscores the kind of the ability that legislatures have to potentially weigh in here, because the insurance commissioner, as I'll talk about in a couple slides, doesn't have that much power in rate review. So the ACA addresses these increases by requiring DHHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, to collaborate with state departments to conduct an annual review of unreasonable increases in premiums for non-grandfathered health plans. So two things to remember when you're talking about health insurance regulation through the ACA is that there are some plans that decided not to change anything drastically since March 23rd, 2010 when the law was signed, and they are what's called grandfathered plans. So they are exempt from complying with the federal law as long as they don't make big changes to premiums, benefits, the network, etc. Their premiums are capped, their premium increases are capped at around 5%, so it'll be very hard for these plans to have any staying power. But over the next few years, odds are you'll see some plans that are deciding to comply with the law becoming non-grandfathered, and some that are not complying with the law and are trying to maintain things so they stay grandfathered. By 2014, a lot of those will go away, and so the ability of DHHS to collect more information on all plans throughout all states will be a lot better than it is now. In addition, plans that propose unreasonable rate increases are then required to provide a justification for the increase to the state and to DHHS. So it increases transparency, and the National Association of Insurance Commissioners and DHS are developing the form and database that will be used to track these changes. But there's no recourse that DHHS has to actually say, no, you can't process this premium increase, it's against the law. All they can do is really label it as unreasonable and call attention to it by posting on the website, review their financial filings, but they can't actually stop the rate increase from going into effect. However, the ACA does provide a pool of about $250 million in grant funding for state insurance departments to support enhanced rate review. So in order to develop the ability to collect information on these unreasonable increases that are typically around over 10%, and to hire actuaries or consult with actuaries to understand the rate review file or the rate filing, the federal government's investing in grants. And so in 45 states and Washington, D.C., about $1 million was given out to each of these states and the district for a first round of funding to develop this capacity. So lots of states didn't have that ability before, including California. So the first round of rate review grants, about $48 million went out to these 46 states. Nine states were able to enact new rate review laws. So California falls into that category. So a rate review law isn't necessarily a rate regulation law. A rate review law just gives the insurance commissioner the ability to review the rate, to request a certain filing guideline be used, and to label the rate increase as unreasonable. But once that rate is labeled as unreasonable, they have no ability to actually say you can't introduce the rate. 17 have proposed rate review laws, and then 30 have hired staff to conduct rate review processes, and 39 have contracted with actuaries. And quite a few states already had rate review regulation or rate review law on the books, but they're using the grant money to kind of bolster their efforts in that regard. So prior to the ACA and prior to the current rate review law, California had the authority to reject a filing if the medical loss ratio reported by the plan in their rate filing was less than 70%. And the medical loss review ratio is the proportion of medical costs out of premiums. So if your premiums are $1,000 a month, your insurer in California prior to 2011 was required to spend at least $700 of that $1,000 on your medical care directly. But they could pocket the other $300 for overhead, marketing, broker fees, profits, etc. There are two regulators in California, so Department of Insurance and Department of Managed Healthcare are both dealing with these issues. And they have different kind of political bents, I suppose you could say, in that the Department of Insurance is led by an elected official. It was Steve Poizner in 2010, and now it's Dave Jones, who's viewed as a far more activist insurance commissioner. And the Department of Managed Healthcare is an appointed official named by the governor. So you end up with kind of whatever the governor's party is ends up appointing the DMHC official. But DMHC, the Department of Managed Healthcare, actually regulates about 85% of the market in California, because they're in charge of HMOs as well as Blue Cross or Blue Shield PPO products. So a new law enacted in California, SB 1163, allowed the insurance commissioner and the Department of Managed Healthcare director to review rates and label them as unreasonable if they exceed 10% and report them to Department of Health and Human Services. But they still lacked a certain level of oversight in that they couldn't actually deny a rate increase. So that's where we come to AB 52, which is California's attempt at a rate regulation law, which would require a health plan insurer to file rate increase requests by January 1st, 2012, and the insurance regulators, both from Department of Managed Healthcare or the Department of Insurance, would have the ability to approve or disapprove any rate change or modify that rate change if it's considered excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory. And the language is a little bit broad, but it gives the entity a little bit of leeway in terms of interpretation of what an excessive premium increase would be. The regulators would also, the law actually allows regulators to go back to January 1st, 2011, review all the rate increases that went into effect already, and if they determine it was excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory, they could actually require insurance plans to refund some of the money back to the policyholder. So it does allow for a collection of fees and penalties, and then post results and requests online for the public. So AB 52 did pass the State Assembly, but it was suspended in the State Senate for consideration next year's session. We operate on a two-year legislative calendar in California, so you're able to kind of suspend a bill and bring it up next time when all your ducks are in a row and you have a better ability to pass the law or not. So we expect it to come up in the next legislative session or the next year, and it would move California pretty far ahead of many states. A lot of states have statutory authority for approval of rate requests, but they have conditions where there's often a 30-day or 60-day waiting period, and if the insurance commissioner does not comment on the rate request or doesn't specifically reject the request, that the request would automatically go through. Only five don't have that automatic implementation if the rate is not increased within 30 to 90 days. So successes have been really uneven as a cost control strategy, because you see all these especially in the individual market, you see these plans coming in and saying, well, we need to raise rates by 30-40% because it's a very volatile environment, the economy's bad, we have healthcare costs and healthcare use increasing drastically, and they ask for these double-digit increases. And what states that do have rate regulation have been able to do is maybe talk them down to 10%, 12% rate increases. So you actually don't see rates going down, you just see them kind of humming along at 10 to 12% rather than the potentially dangerous 30 to 40% rates. So even if AB 52 passes, we may not have the ability to really constrain healthcare costs through rate regulation necessarily. We'll have a better ability to keep track of what's going on. DHHS will know what trends to look out for in the individual market, and we'll know what insurers are potentially abusing premium increases in the individual market in different areas. But it would be difficult for them to actually bend the cost curve with rate regulation. Now, medical loss ratio attempts to get at that as well, which is another provision of the law. In addition to rate review, the ACA requires all individual and small group insurance products to operate on 80% medical loss ratio, and all large group plans to operate on 85% medical loss ratio standard starting January 1st, 2011. So some of you may have gotten refund checks or a voucher for next year because your insurer did not comply with medical loss ratio, and to make it even, they had to reimburse to their policyholders the amount that would bring them into compliance with the medical loss ratio. I actually have a student who got one, but she has to apply it to next year's insurance plan, so somewhat unfair, I suppose. The previous guideline in California was 70%, so it's changed substantially to 80%, and that's according to federal guidelines. And we had Dave Jones, the insurance commissioner, actually had to enact emergency regulation because the MLR law that was being passed through the legislature wasn't signed by October. It was signed October 9th, 2011, and he needed the ability to participate in federal law starting in January of 2011. And so there was no ability to do that without this emergency regulation. But California has moved forward with actual legislation that does it. But other states might have to use the regulatory process through state agencies to comply with federal law differently than the legislation might indicate. Of course, that federal law can't necessarily, or that state law wouldn't necessarily include rate regulation. It would just be to come into compliance with rate review and to patrol medical loss ratio. So the hope there is that we indirectly put pressure on insurers to put a larger percentage of their premiums into medical care. But of course, how that's counted was decided by the federal government and the National Association of Insurance Commissioners earlier in 2010. And there are, you know, quality improvement metrics can be used in the medical loss ratio requirements, et cetera. So in closing, I just want to mention that, you know, the use and implementation will be inconsistent across states. It's a federal guideline that's been issued. All states are supposed to comply, but as we know, some states have decided not to comply with healthcare reform in general, and some are less enthused to take up these kind of pretty significant legislative issues in their actual sessions. So it might be carried out by state agencies, it might be carried out by legislation, or it might be enforced by the federal government if the state doesn't comply. You, of course, have to deal with these political scenarios because the insurance commissioner is often an elected official in many states, and in California we have this mix of an elected official and an appointed official. Regulations apply to specific markets. So in the individual market, there's a lot of complaint about rate increases, but in 2014, once the exchanges open and insurance companies are then joining those exchanges and offering coverage, it's dependent upon the states to decide how to implement their exchange. So in California, for example, we have an active purchaser exchange, which means the exchange board can actually negotiate with health insurers to determine what the rate will be. In Colorado, there's a passive purchaser exchange. So any purchaser that's willing, or any insurer that's willing, can enter the exchange and offer plans as long as they abide by state regulation. So there will be less concern about, or there will be less oversight that the state has or the exchange board has over insurance premiums increasing. Whereas in California, this problem could potentially go away to a large part because of the fact that there will be negotiation within the exchange. So these are kind of indirect cost controls that could put downward pressure on the increase in premiums, but odds are they're not putting downward pressure on medical costs in general. And I think as things roll out where if we do move from fee-for-service structures to bundled payment where, you know, a hospital and their physician group is getting $50,000 for the heart condition, where $12,000 or $10,000 is going to professional fees and $40,000 is going to the hospital. That's lower than the $60,000 that Gil posted earlier that shows, you know, a $10,000 difference there. And so if we're able to make providers more efficient in terms of bundling payment and provide that financial incentives, it could put downward pressure on premiums and negotiated rates that could drive insurance premiums down at a better rate than just implementing something like rate regulation or medical loss ratio. So I'll leave it at that.